All right, great to have him on a Monday. You know them well. Crime and Justice Radio, every Monday night at 6 o'clock, precedes the replay show at 7. Bruce Barquette, Ida Leisenring, the great firm of Barquette, Epstein, Kieran, Aldea, and Loturco. Nice enough to give us a couple of minutes here on a Monday morning. We say a good morning to both. How are you? Hope you had a great weekend. Ida, how are you? Bruce?
I'm well. Good morning, Jay. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well today. Thanks for having us.
Hope you had a very restful weekend, both of you. You know, I started to listen to last week's show, Pat Ryder, Commissioner, Nassau County Police. I got to finish it, truth be told here. I'm looking forward to it. I'll do that today. How did everything go? Were you satisfied? Is it what you expect? I'll start with you from last Monday. Go ahead.
He is absolutely what I expected. He's a very authentic individual. He doesn't appear to have the makeup of a politician or someone who would end up being a commissioner based on their politics. But what he has done with Nassau is remarkable. And sometimes statistics lie, but we actually had an individual, Thomas Hargrove, who's been deemed the serial killer detective, who has this amazing website where he collects all murder rates from every single county, and clearance rates. Clearance rates is how many murders are, you know, the police department in that county actually solving. And when I did the math before he came on, Nassau's clearance rate appeared as close to 100% as you can imagine. So when he said we've reduced crime significantly and this is one of the safest counties in America, the statistics actually back that up.
And it's unbelievable. You know, Bruce, when you think about it, I mean, Nassau, as close as they are, right, to New York City, and we know what the city is going through right now. It's tough. But the numbers don't lie. I mean, that is impressive. I mean, he has really put the county on the map. He's done an excellent job. Now, listen, you could cite all the other stuff, some of the controversy, that's a whole nother story right now. Right now it's about safety and everything else. The numbers don't lie, right, Bruce?
The numbers don't lie, and other stuff, be damned, to be frank with you. He's running a safe county. I live here with my family, and burglaries are way down, homicides are way down, violent crime is down. That's what we want in a police commission. And if you haven't listened to the show yet, I mean, other people, you can still get it online. Go listen to him speak, because he not only talks about how he's doing with Nassau County and recruitment and all the kinds of things, he's very, very articulate about policing now and keeping the morale of the department up and how the police have been able to do their jobs with kind of a target on the back since the George Floyd incident. And he talks about excessive force, talks about the use of force. Excellent, excellent interview. We're happy to have him on.
And out of 60,000 protesters, I think that's the number that they counted in terms of George Floyd protests in Nassau, only 12 were arrested, which I found kind of shocking. You would expect more. So that was extremely revealing in my view.
Yeah. And that is unbelievable. So I'm going to look forward to finish listening to that a little bit later on, as I always do with your shows. And you got a great, and now before we get into tonight, I want to get into what I thought was a big story of the weekend. Bruce, I'll start with you. And that is with the Department of Justice and the nursing homes and the state of New York and the governor. And listen, you know, this was one of those balloons popped. For many, because the DOJ not to investigate, and we're talking, ladies and gentlemen, whether the civil rights here of residents in New York's government-run nursing homes were violated by the, you know, the controversial mission policy related to the pandemic, the governor's policy, you know, the March 25th edict of allowing COVID positives back into those homes. Bruce, when you heard that, what was the overall thought process there for you?
Honestly, it was not a big deal, because I think the real more important investigation, at least as it relates to Andrew Cuomo, is the one that's still being run out of the Eastern District of New York. Same prosecutors who indicted and convicted Thomas Spoda and Edward Mangano from Nassau County are investigating Cuomo for the fudging, if you will, of the numbers of deaths from nursing homes. The civil rights investigation never got going at all. It was just a question of whether or not they would commence an investigation under that umbrella, and they decided not to. But the investigation that's been going on concerning reporting the numbers, which is really the threat to him, and that's really been the scandal, that they deliberately underreported the numbers of people dying in nursing homes to cover up the decision-making process they had. So they're giving false statistics to the United States government in the middle of a pandemic that make policy decisions based upon that reporting. That's a problem, and that investigation is still going on. And trust me, we know these prosecutors. You don't want to fool with them.
I agree with you. You still have the FBI. You still have the Eastern District. There's no question. Letitia James, you know, doing her thing. The only thing, Aida, I did not like about it, and that's good. All what Bruce said is true. There is no question. You cover up. You affect the formula of how to go about business from a country standpoint, because let's face it, New York was the epicenter of it all. So when you're covering up these numbers for, as you know, what Melissa DeRosa said, you know, his top secretary, you know, as they froze, they didn't want to get the backlash from the previous administration. My concern here, and listen, I have confidence these other investigations are going to reveal things here. But the only thing I didn't like about it was that we get politics into this stuff. Because to me, you're disbanding it here in New York. You're doing the same thing with Pennsylvania and Michigan with how Gretchen Whitmer ran her show over there in the state of Michigan. So in essence, this thing without question gets to me in political standards. And that's never good. That is never good when politics is infused in all this. That's what I got out of this.
I think as a society, we're all getting extremely sick of the politics. We just want individuals who run our country that are straightforward, that are practical, and that do their jobs, not politicians who become famous overnight, enjoy the limelight, and try to sell book deals. And here, fudging the numbers, if you will, and if that's, you know, provable that there was an intent to do so, the federal government relied on those numbers in releasing funding to New York State, and as Bruce said, in making policy decisions. If a crime was committed, I have great confidence that the Eastern District will find it, prove it, and have an indictment. If a crime was not committed, then I also have faith in the Eastern District that they won't go forward. But it may appear that they're taking their time. They do a very thorough investigation, and we'll have an answer.
Listen, I understand. A lot of people were very upset with all this stuff. But, you know, be careful. Take a step back. Look at the overall picture here. That's what I'm telling people. Because a lot of people wanted to discuss this and everything else over the last couple of days. And I said, listen, you still have investigations going on here. Be careful. Let it play out, okay? The cover-up, the 15,000, okay? The number that finally was brought into fruition. Be careful here. The DeRosa comment looms large, okay? They froze. They covered it up. They covered it up. If there's no revelation as far as what comes out of that, that's when everybody can sound off it. But at this point in time, let it go. Let it play out. And we'll see what happens. And you still have the harassment situation as well, which I think is very viable. Very viable. So let's see how it plays out. Now, tonight, you got a great guest, Aida Joe McBride. And this is the individual who is representing one of those individuals down on January 6th at the Capitol, the riots, Richard Barnett. Now, folks, Barnett was the guy, I did right. He was the guy who had, you know, sitting at Pelosi's desk, you know, with the feet up and everything else, correct?
He was taking a rest on her desk. He had his legs up. And it's that famous picture that we've all seen of him in Pelosi's office. And yes, Joe McBride is an attorney. He is New York-based. He actually followed some of my legal education. He was at the Innocence Project at Cardozo. He graduated. He began working at the Legal Aid Society representing indigent defendants accused of crime. And now he's representing one of the most famous rioters, if you will, or trespassers, if you talk to somebody else. And Richard Bigot was incarcerated for a while. He was released in the state that he's from when he voluntarily surrendered in D.C. He had, and then I actually read the motion Joe McBride wrote for his release, and the judge ultimately agreed to release him. And now we await to see what he's going to do. Is he going to go to trial? Is he going to plead guilty? What kind of a sentence? We've seen the first sentence issued, which was 8 months for an individual that was present. I, you know, don't know specific details about him. He wasn't one of the more high-profile persons, but that individual was out, not incarcerated, and he will be stepping in for that 8-month sentence.
Bruce, you know, Barnett, not only, and listen, I agree with Aida. You know, when you break into a building, when you are fighting the crowds, you're trying to get through small windows and everything else, sometimes large windows, you know, it takes its toll. So, you know, I got to think Barnett found the first office he could, take a load off his feet. You know, he put the stun gun down and everything else, you know, held up a piece of mail just for blanks and giggles to the media as far as what was on a desk. Listen, who would have thunk Barnett feet on desk, Nancy Pelosi's speaker? He probably didn't even know. He probably was looking for somewhere to rest. It is a load off you to try and take and get that type of respite. You have to have that in place. No question. That's the way I kind of look at things with 60-year-old Richard Barnett, sir.
Yeah, well, look, I'm just sorry. I can't buy into all that. That's just
okay.
A bridge too far for me. But you have to have the couple of things here. One, you have to have the punishment kind of meet the offense. And both sides have, both sides of the politics, talk about politics, both sides of the political spectrum here have exaggerated their particular position. This wasn't a trespass, nor was it an insurrection. It was a riot that tried to shut down the working of the U.S. government at a very critical point in time in order to help delay the installation of an elected president. That's a bad thing, and those people deserve to be punished. He knew darn well where he was. He knew darn well what he was doing, and I think the government will be able to prove that. That said, he should, you know, having him held in solitary confinement for months pre-trial is not the right thing. And what's happening to Joe McBride, one of the reasons why we decided to have him on, is I think it's interesting to see how lawyers represent individuals who are asserting political positions but charged with crimes because of their action, right? So he wasn't motivated, the client here, wasn't motivated by greed or anger or jealousy or all the typical things that motivate criminals. He was motivated by some political belief that he thought that Trump should be the president and not Biden, and that maybe Trump won or Biden didn't win legitimately. And because of that, McBride has been vilified, not for representing somebody charged with a crime, because that's what we all do every day, but because he's representing somebody charged with a crime who has political beliefs. And that to me is interesting. A few months ago, we had on Ron Kuby, who has famously represented some individuals over the course of the years based upon same kind of thing, but left-leaning politics. I have represented individuals, frankly, from both sides on different points in my life. So it's a fascinating, I think, part of practicing criminal defense law, if you're willing to do it. And Joe has stepped into the breach here and has been vilified for doing it by the left. He was on CNN and treated horribly. So I want to see what his perspective is, how he's handling it, and talk a little bit about the politics. But really, I'm more interested in the kind of inside baseball of representing individuals in this context.
And Aida, you know, I remember in the beginning with Barnett, prosecutors said, you know, there would, I guess, the possibility discussed that he could have faced a recommended sentence of 6 to 7 years. And I'm talking about in the federal guidelines here. And it's based on the charges in his case, though no formal plea offer has been put in play. And that's correct, right? Has there been discussion of any type of plea, Aida, on this?
I'm sure. I mean, generally speaking, there are discussions. Those discussions aren't public. They're made in, you know, conference rooms and telephone calls. and nothing is committed to. What I think is so difficult about federal practice, unlike state practice, is that you are rewarded for pleading guilty, and you are clearly punished for not pleading guilty. And so often attorneys find themselves in a position to say, I can't guarantee that you would win. And if you lose, you might get five times as much jail time as you would if you take a plea now and, you know, we write a memo supporting, you know, a non-jail sentence. But here, because Pelosi was actually there and present and the vice president was present, it's a statutory crime. It would otherwise be trespass, but it carries a sentence of 10 years, which is really scary. And look, you know, we all say this. They're not all rioters, you know, deserve the same degree of punishment. And if you watch some of the videos of what was happening on the ground, it doesn't look like what we all saw on our television. Certain angles do, certain video footage does, but if you watch others, it just appears as a protest. And there are so many people that some individuals were sort of carried in. You know, they weren't breaking the railings. They weren't breaking windows. They came. They were the aftermath. They were the second or third or fourth row in. And they couldn't see what was happening. They couldn't hear the gunshots. And so it perspective matters. It really does, especially when you're trying to prove the intent of the defendant, which is required in order to have a conviction. So, I knew Joe McBride before he put this case on. I've watched his struggle. I've watched him be personally attacked and be canceled. He's coined the term hashtag DC Gitmo, comparing the conditions of confinement in Washington, D.C. to the conditions of confinement in Guantanamo Bay, which obviously,
ridiculous. Forgive me.
They differ, but let's not forget, you don't need to almost kill somebody to torture them. Solitary confinement, deprivation of their right to see their lawyer, starvation, these are the things that the Human Rights Commission considers torture, and we ought not torture anybody, but certainly not someone who is supposed to be presumed innocent.
Right, no question. And you got to give this guy every fair look possible. And that's what's going to happen. Even though, listen, I mean, truth be told, he did call himself a nationalist, prepared for violent death, tried to get rid of his phone, his clothes, and, you know, the stun gun, anticipating investigators. But, you know, this is a guy they're going to look at who came to that region for one reason. And that was, you know, he was ready to be part of that revolt. I mean, that's all there is to it. You know, that's going to be a very interesting situation for McBride. I'll be listening tonight. I'll tell you one thing. I'll be doing that live tonight because this is going to be an interesting one because Barnett, folks, was one of the more prominent ones. I mean, you know, the picture is a million words. Speaks for itself as far as sitting in Pelosi's office.
My understanding is that a reporter asked him to pose on a table. So it wasn't his intent to come in here. He didn't ask someone for a selfie, but that, in a sense, I don't want to say he was set up because he knew what he was doing when he walked into the building, but he was asked to pose for some reporter from some major news agency. But the whole world looked at him like, look at that bravado for doing that.
No question. So very interesting the way this thing will unfold. Joe McBride, the very special guest tonight of Bruce Barquette and Ida Lysenry. Guys, well done. Look forward to it. Keep up the great work as always. The shows are phenomenal. Really are. Great guest. Every week is a great guest. Every week. And you got one tonight, so I will be listening intently. Thanks so much, Bruce and Ida.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
You got it. It's tonight at 6. And that's Crime and Justice Radio. You don't want to miss that, really. That's a great... Every week, I'm not kidding, every week they have a phenomenal guest. And no exception tonight.